starting at the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay, so on the sheet, I quoted a few things that will help you. So the first thing I quoted on the sheet at the top is just the quote from the Mishnah. So you can either look back at the Mishnah or you can use the sheet, which is we're quoting this line from the Mishnah. The last line which said, Konam bayit zeh she'ani nechnas, sadeh zo she'ani lokeach, meit o she'macharu la'acher asur. Okay, so if you say, remember there was a difference between if you say your house, and if it's your house, then as soon as it passes ownership to somebody else, the guy dies and it goes to his kids, or he sells it, then already it's not considered part of your property. You don't have it on my hand. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Fine. No, take this.
I wasn't paying any attention.
And then if you say, Bayit zeh she'ani nechnas, that it's to this house, then already you have a problem, right? Then it's going to be a sur, even if it passes ownership, because you were referring to the house itself. So now if you notice, this is particularly if you make a neder. Yesterday we had all this distinction between if you make the neder yourself or you're madir somebody else. You say to someone else, you're forbidden to my property. So this is a case where the Mishnah is clearly talking about a case where she'ani nechnas, so that I am forbidding myself. So Avimi asks, okay, so the Gemara starts out, Hamer l'chaveiro v'chule, that's just the quote of the line that we just quoted. By Avimi asks, Konam l'bayit zeh she'ata nechnas. What if you say, this house will be forbidden to you, right? I say to you, this house will be forbidden to you. It's not that you did it to yourself, I did it to you. So meit osha macharula acher mahu. What would happen? Am I forbidding this house to you forever? Okay, the house in whatever status it's at. Or am I forbidding the house in the status of who the owner is now? By the way, who's the obvious owner of the house? It's only my house because I can't possibly, and this is to be important, I can't possibly forbid you to someone else's property. Or I can't forbid you to go into your own house. The only thing I can forbid to someone else is my own stuff. Otherwise, what right do I have to this other person? So therefore, if I say you can't come into this house, which is my house, what am I referring to? Now, this goes back to something we saw. Exactly. We saw this already. So do we say, Adam osir davar shebrishuto l'chishe yetze mirishuto? Olo. Okay, what do we say? Do we say that a person can forbid something in his property to someone even... Right? What happens after it? Where do we see this? Okay. So here I quote it on the sheet. Okay. It's on Membet. So there were those two cases of, it was in the Shvi year, right? If you talk about in the Shemitah, you say it before the Shemitah and then the Shemitah comes. What happens? What's the status? So Rav and Shmuel had said, Nechasim Elo Alecha. Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish said, Nechasai Alecha. And there was a whole thing. So the first way they tried to understand the machloket was to say, that the basis of the machloket was that Rav and Shmuel say Adam osir davar shebrishuto afilu lechashir tzem rishuto, and Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish said Ein Adam osir davar shebrishuto lechashir tzem rishuto. Now, if you remember, what happens here is the Gemara asks two questions on the second shita. Okay, so the Gemara asked, the first question was, is there really someone who says that Ein Adam osir? In other words, the assumption was that Adam osir davar. In other words, you can be osir something even once it leaves your rishut. And then the second one, they quoted a Mishnah, which was to say, Ha'omir lebino, we're going to quote it right now in the Gemara also, Konam shata nehaneli, meit yirashena, but if he says, b'chayavu b'moto, imeit lo yirashena. Right? Which means that what? That he, right? That once, right? That you can be osir davar shebrishuto, even once it leaves your reshut. You can basically forbid it. So then the Gemara said, well, maybe this is different because it says b'chayavu b'moto, and he specifically said it. So maybe you can't learn from here. But even though the Gemara did kind of reject the second question here, in the end, what's clear is that the maskana, this sugya, because there's still question number one, is that Adam has the power. Everyone agrees. And then that's why they rejected this entirely, and that's not what Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are arguing about. It must be they were arguing about something else. And then in the end, if you remember, we concluded they weren't actually arguing. They were each talking about different cases. But in the end, the conclusion of that Gemara is going to match the conclusion here, which is, even though there's going to be a minor differentiation between that sugya and this sugya, and that's why I wanted to bring this, is that in the end, they say, you can forbid something even once it leaves your reshut. Okay? Like in the mate case, like the case where he says, b'chayavu b'moti, o b'moto. So they're basically saying, they want to know, do you say Adam Oser Devar Shebrishito L'Chashay Yisem Rishito Olo? So Amarava Tashma. Ah, Rava says, let's learn it from here. Which case? Exactly the case we just read. Ha'omer lebeno, konam she'iyata neheneli, v'met. He says to his son, you will not, right, it will be forbidden to you any hana you will get from me. And then he dies, umet, yirashena. The kid can now inherit his property. But if he said, b'chayavu b'moto, umet, lo yirashena. Shema Amina, what can we learn from here? Adam osir davar shebrishuto, l'chashiyatzei merushuto, shema Amina. So here, what's the difference? Here the Gemara doesn't say, oh, it's because you said b'chayav b'moto. Here the Gemara uses it as an example to say, because it works here, it shows it can work anywhere. And even though we could, in theory, reject it the way we rejected it there, since in the end the sugya there anyway concluded, for other reasons, that it must be that that's the case. So in the end, like I said, even though there's a minor variation, you could, in theory, reject it, since the Gemara, in general, doesn't reject this theory and says that that's the case, that's what the Gemara concludes here.
Is this how you disinherit someone?
Right, you could disinherit someone this way, for sure.
It's not in writing.
If you're looking for a way to do it.
No, but it doesn't override will, or I mean, it seems.
Ah, is it in right? Right, it has to.
You learn that on your deathbed, if you say something, you have to honor it, and it overrides anything.
That's on your deathbed. Right, this isn't on your deathbed, though.
Like
this is a neder that you've taken that basically overrides any dine yerusha. Because this would, but although I have to say one thing, it actually doesn't. Because in these cases, it doesn't really mean lo yirashena. He does get the yerusha, but he can't actually get benefit from any of the property. But for example, let's say he owes money. So someone could take the money from, and it's he, what happens is here, he can't get hana'ah from it, but if someone, he owes someone money, they can go take it from this property. Because he does have ownership over the property. He just doesn't.
He can't benefit from the
right, ownership. He can't benefit. It's actually a weird situation. So it actually can't override a will. Right? Because the Mefreshim talked about there that it's this weird situation where there's certain things that he. There's certain things, like I think a Baal Chov can come take money from him and take it from that property. Or maybe his wife can take Mizona from there. I don't know what all the things are, but there's some weird lines that are drawn there about things. It's not true that he's not your resh at all, but it means he can't really benefit from that property. So it does go into his possession, but there's an in-between. What?
His Baal Chov or his father's Baal Chov?
No, even his Baal Chov. So it's true, he's getting indirect hana'ah, but we talked about that also, it's a loss, right.
It's a legal benefit.
It's a right. It's different. So that's why there's certain things yes, certain things no. I don't know all of them, what the distinctions are.
Do you need a written will?
First of all, if you don't have a written will, so you could, you know, it just get right. It would go, the Bechor would get Pishnayim and everyone else would get equal. Although I don't know if we really still hold by the Pishnayim if you don't have a will. I think it's just all split up equally.
Because it seems crazy that a verbal declaration, which can be made in anger, can overcome.
But it's a neder, because a neder is a verbal declaration that clearly has significant mashma.
That's another reason.
But that's why I say it doesn't override, because he still gets it, it's just he can't benefit from it. So it's different, it's actually not the case. I correct what I said at the very beginning, my instinctual reaction, but
yeah.
Well, there must be a case in which
they have to, right, if you say something on your deathbed when you're not fully, you know, or not
when you're not lucid, and you're not in your
right,
mind,
I'm sure there's
sure.
a thing about that
no, it is
right.
It makes things very complicated.
It does, it makes things very complicated, because at your last moment you could, you know, I mean, what I read the other day about it was that they say the reason why they allow him to, they make it serious, is just so that they don't distress the person at the time of their death. Because the person can be very distressed that, you know, he had this will and he doesn't really want that to happen and he wants things to be different and he could, you know, get very distressed and we don't want to do that to him, which is really interesting. It's, right, consideration of that person, where they're at even though they're about to die, and yet we take very seriously what they say without having to make a kinyan and all the other stuff. Okay, next case. Now we're going to have a similar type question on a different Mishnah, okay, where the Mishnah also talked about Perot Alai, and then what would be the case if it's, you did it to somebody else. Tanan Hatam. Okay, this is a Mishnah on Nun Zayin, I believe it's on Nun Zayin. Konam Perot Elu Alai, Konam Hein Alpi, Konam Hein Lipi. Okay, however you say it, whether you say it, Lipi, Alpi, alai. Okay, you forbid these fruits to yourself. Asur bechilufehen ubegidulehen. You're not only forbidden to use those fruits, but if you sold those fruits for money, okay, you took those fruits and you sold them and you got the money, you're also forbidden to use the money. And if you took those fruits and replanted them, you'd also be forbidden to get benefit from the, you know, from the new tree that grew. Okay? By Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama now asks the question. Amar konam perot ha'elu al ploni mahu bechilufehen. If you say these fruits will be forbidden to someone else, what's the story with their chilufehen? Now notice he doesn't ask about gidulehen. Okay, what's the same about chilufehen and gidulehen? They're davar shelo bala olam. They don't exist right now, right? In other words, yeah, money exists, but it doesn't exist, right? Or again, it could be a barter system. I traded fruits for something else. So that object doesn't exist as far as the ownership of this person is concerned right now. And replanting, obviously, is davar shelo bala olam. Now, if you notice, Rabbi Rahama only asks about the gidulim, about the chilufim, and not about the gidulim. So some people say it's obvious to him that the gidulim would be usher because the gidulim were made from that same fruit. So, and that would be the case. And that's the main approach of most of the mefarshim. The Rambam actually says, no, the chilufim are the same as the gidulim. And then there's like a question, how could the Rambam say that if the pre grows from, and then they make a distinction actually between, there's different kinds of fruits or vegetables. Here, fruits and vegetables are the same category. Some, when you replant something, it grows with that actual fruit in it, or seed, you know, when you plant like a, I forget the distinction they made with garlic, maybe the garlic is, I think like the same garlic will actually grow. Whereas other things, it just kind of disintegrates and new things come in its place. And you can maybe distinguish between, you know, those two types. And that might be a distinction, a possible answer to the Rambam. Okay, so anyway, the question is only on the chilufehen. So now we want to know, so if you say, konam perot ha'elo al ploni, what's the story with the chilufehen? Here's going to be the two sides of the argument. Mi amrinan gabei dilei, do we say that, why does it work when he does it about himself, dilei is himself? Ho'il v'adam oser perot chavero al atzmo, adam oser davar shelo ba'al ha'olam al atzmo. Since you're allowed to forbid anything you want to yourself. So therefore, you can also forbid even davar shelo ba'al ha'olam, right? What's the idea? You want to just say, all this is forbidden to me. So if you can do anything you want, I can say your property is forbidden to me. I can say your property. I can take anything in the world and say it's forbidden to me. So why shouldn't I be allowed to do davar shelo ba'al ha'olam? And that's why chilufehen and gidulehen are asur. But kabe chavero, but what did we just say in the beginning of the shiur today? If I want to forbid something to you, I'm limited. I can only forbid my stuff to you. I can't forbid anyone else's stuff to you. So gabe chavero ho'il ve'ein adam oser perot chavero chavero. I can't forbid your stuff to you, or likewise anyone else's stuff to you. So therefore, maybe we would say, since I'm limited in what I can forbid to you, so also we would say ein adam oser davar shelo ba'al ha'olam chavero. Okay, and therefore the chilufehen would be mutarim. Okay, now by the way, everyone agrees. I'm stopping big question, but the discussion among the Mefarshim is that even though there's a question here, are the chilufehem mutarim or not, everyone would agree that it's usher if I forbid my fruits to you, and then I sell my fruits for money. Everyone agrees that l'chatchila, I can't sell my fruits for money. If they're forbidden to you, I can't sell my fruits for money and then give you the money. Or I can't flip my fruits into vegetables or whatever it might be into something else and then say, oh, now you can benefit from this, because that's just skirting the neder. It's only if I did it anyway, even though I wasn't supposed to, and I did it, then the question is what would be, okay? But clearly, it's not a lechatchila situation that I can, that this is like a patent, that I can just flip it and then it would be okay. O dilma, or do we say, mishum dechilufin kigidulin dame, Loshna hu v'loshna chavero. Or maybe we would say the chilufin are like gidulim. Like I said in the beginning, other than this opinion in the Rambam, which is a little difficult according to the Gemara, and you'd have to distinguish between different types of gidulim to answer this question, but maybe you would say that gidulim obviously are aser, and therefore we'll say the chilufin are just like gidulim, and just like gidulim are clearly aser, lo mashanehu lo shna chavero, doesn't matter whether you forbid yourself or your friend. Therefore, we'll say the same is true about the chilufin. So that's our question. So again, it's the exact same structure as the last one. We had a case where it talked about you forbidding yourself. We want to know, does the same thing apply to when you forbid someone else? In the last case, we concluded that it's the same. Because just like, right, Adam Oseh Devar Shebrishuto, L'chisha Yetzeh Merushuto, even when it's no longer in his Rishut. And here, it seems we're going to see it's the other way. Amrav Acha Bar Menyumi, Tashma, Ha'omer Li'ishto, I'm wrong. We're going to try to bring answers saying forget what I said. We'll see in a minute where we go with it. Okay, it's not going to be conclusive. Tashma, ha'omer li'ishto, konam she'ani nehenelach, lava, lova, uba'alei chovim ba'inu nifra'im. If he says to his wife, I will not get benefit from you. Okay, and then what happens? This is actually a difficult Gemara because the text sounds like Konam Shanina Halach, I won't get benefit from you, but most of the Mefreshim say that can't really be what's going on here. He's forbidding her to get benefit from him. So he says, you can't get benefit from me. Now, what's the problem? So first of all, there's a bunch of problems with this. How can he possibly do this? Isn't he obligated to sustain her? So two possible answers are given. Tosfot says maybe he did this Bizmana Erusin when he wasn't Chayav yet. He had no responsibilities yet toward her. It only ticks in when the marriage starts. So maybe he did it in an earlier stage and then the neder kind of still stayed. Or some of them are first to explain there is a particular way he can word it that it would work. Okay, even though it really is against. It's sort of like what we saw about when he says, I won't sleep with you, right? Isn't that one of his obligations to sleep with her? And yet we saw he could take a neder to forbid her to sleep with him. So anyway, he says, you can't get benefit from me. Now what's the problem? She needs food. She has to eat. Where is she going to get food from? So what does she do? Lova, she borrows money from some guy. Okay, she goes to a guy and asks him to borrow money. And what does that guy do? Balei chovim ba'im ben Ephraim. They go back to the husband and collect the money from the husband. So my time, why does this work? My time, balei chovim nifraim. Lav mishum dechilufin, lav kegidulin tami. Wouldn't you say this is the same thing? In the end, right, there's a hachlafa here. She's borrowing money from someone else, and he's getting from the husband. So it's basically what you would call chilufin in this case is it's indirect, right? She's indirectly getting money from her husband, but it's very indirect. So that would be the same as the chilufin. If I sell something, then it no longer, right, and then you want to benefit from it. So it would be like that. So now, Rava says, no. Okay, and then in which case, what would we say? Right, the chilufin are not like gidulin, in which case, if you forbid someone else, you're actually allowed. That's why I said here, they're going to go in the opposite direction. Okay, they're going to try to say, dafka, in this case, it's allowed. But then they reject it. Amarava, dilma lechatchila hu dilo, vi avad avad. Maybe it's only lechatchila that he can't do it, but if he did it, he did it. Okay, what this line means is big debate. Okay, I'll give you three different interpretations. One is that it's a sur lahachlif. Okay, you can't do it, but if you did it, it's mutar. Like in the case of the woman, she went and borrowed, and then it became mutar to her. That's not a great answer because, first of all, most of them are fresh and think in general. We say that, like I said in the beginning, it's asur to do that in general. You can't ever flip your stuff if someone's forbidden to it to try to get out of it. So it's not really a good answer. Another one is that it's bidyeved with the woman because she needs food. And she has no other way to get food. So therefore, that's a bidyeved situation. Now, again, you have to always say in these cases, it's not pikuach nefesh. Like, maybe she could go to her parents' house, she could find food, she could live off tzedakah, but, you know, here's the situation she prefers, right? In other words, she wants to do it in a normal manner.
But it's also not a good answer, because you can always do that. You can always say, but she needs, I mean, you can get out of anything.
If you say there's a need, right. You could, it's true. But that's what they're saying. They're saying, in a regular case, if I forbade you to eat my fruits, so I can't do chilufin, unless, you know, it's a situation where you really, really need it and there's no one else who can give you fruits. You know, like we saw in that Mishnah, where they tried to come up with solutions. If you guys are walking and there's no one else except that guy, so be mafkir and he'll take it, right?
I don't say this is a comparable case, because in this case, there was a prior chiyuv.
that he is now
that he was obligated.
Yes. In the previous case with the fruits, there was no prior chiyuv
right.
to the fruits.
Okay, so one, you could say that there's a distinction between the cases because the husband does have an obligation to his wife. You could definitely distinguish there. That's one way. There's a bunch of ways you could show distinctions here also, and I think the third interpretation really highlights that. So the third interpretation I'm going to bring is that basically, how did it work here? She took money from a credit from a guy, a random guy. At that point, that money had absolutely no connection to her husband. Only when the creditor decides to go to the husband and say, pay me back the money, then it gets connected to the husband. So it's kind of like there's a disconnect between her act of taking the money. When she took the money, it was totally disconnected to her husband. Only after the Baal Echav says, ah, by the way, I'm going to go collect this from your husband. Even if he was intending it from the beginning, still that money had never, it wasn't like money that was transferred from the husband to that person before then, like the payroll were transferred to somebody else. It was so disconnected, and maybe that's what the answer the Gemara is giving. Okay? So again, it's unclear exactly what this means. We're going to see the exact same line in another minute, using a different context, and it's going to be explained differently. Like even though it's the exact same line, it's also going to be explained somewhat differently than here. Okay, so the first attempt didn't work because, again, whether you say it because Aviva said it or whether you say the three possible interpretations of the Gemara said, they're not comparable cases. Amar Rava. I went back. Okay, Ela Tashma. Let's learn from here. Ha-mikadesh be'orla ena mikudeshet. If I take fruits, right, you can marry someone with fruits that have value to them. But if I take it from orla, orla is the first 3 years of your tree, and it's asr bahana. So you can't get hana'ah from doing that. So you can't use the orla itself. But mecharan, if he sold the orla, v'kidesh b'dimehem. Now again, it's usher to sell orla and use it for chulin purposes. But if you did, and you were married a woman with that money, harezo mekudeshet. So what do you see here? Again, it's the chilufehen, right? You now turned it into money, and now you see you can actually benefit from the money. So again, the Gemara answers, Hachanami lechatchilahu delo vi avid avid. Okay? Lechatchila, you can't do it, but vi avid avid. So what's lechatchila? So here they explain that it's to switch the money, switch the payroll for money is forbidden to do. But to use that money after you've already done it is mutar. Okay? So in other words, they weren't konesoto, right? You would think maybe there would be a knas issued. If you do something you're not allowed to do, well, then you can't ever benefit from that money. But instead they say, it's usher to do it, but once you do it, you did it already, and now you can use that money. So do you still want to ask her?
No, it's okay. Fine. It's all about b'diavad, then.
Yeah.
Everything.
What do you mean, everything?
Like, that's how they're just solving everything.
Well, they're not really solving anything here, because what they're doing is, okay, let's think about the structure. They want to know what the story is with this chilufehen. So what do they say? Let's bring some case which seems to be talking about a chilufehen. And then they say, well, that case doesn't prove anything because you could say that that's only b'dievet. So in the end, they're not proving anything because they tried to bring a source to prove it and they discredited the source because they said the source doesn't necessarily tell you anything about our case. So in the end, we're left without an answer, according to the Gemara anyway. You know, the Mefarshim try to come up with answers. But in the end, right, we say that that we don't know. Some of the Mefarshim here say, look, it's only a Derabanan because it's a chiluf. It's not the actual thing. And because it's Derabanan, we go Lekula. But some people actually are Machmir in this case, the poskim. So, and as in the end, it's not that they're saying everything's B'dievet. They're saying you could read those sources as saying that it was just a B'dievet case, in which case it can't teach about our case. Okay? Or, even on the third interpretation we saw there, it's not that it's a B'dievet case, it's that it's different than our. In other words, it works with B'dievet a little, but it's a different case than the one we're trying to learn to. Okay, depending on how you understand it. Okay. Now we're going to go to the Mishnah, new Mishnah. We'll basically read through the Mishnah and we'll stop there for today. Hareni alecha cherem. Okay, remember we learned about this cherem. There's two types of charamim. There's cherem of bed kabayit, which basically means if you say something is cherem, it's hekdesh. And then there's cherem of the kohanim, which is something that you would be specified would go to the kohen. And that, once the Kohen, it gets to his property, it's already chulin, it's not kodesh. So if you say something's cherem like that, then it's not asr bahana, because the cherem of the Kohanim is not asr bahana. And if you remember, we talked about, depending on where you lived, what your stam cherem is. If you lived in Yehuda, there were a lot of Kohanim, and therefore your stam cherem would be cherem Kohanim, it would be mutar. if you lived in the Galil, you're stam cherem, we cherem lebet habayit, because you didn't really have kohanim living there, and therefore clearly that wasn't your intent, and therefore we're going to assume that our Mishnah is talking about a stam cherem in the Galil. And even the Mishnah mentions HaGalil at the end, but it seems clear we're talking about HaGalil, because we're talking about someone who says, Hareini alecha cherem, and it's going to be Aser. So somebody says, Hareini alecha cherem, I am going to be cherem to you, which basically means what? In other words, you can't benefit from any of my stuff. So, in this case, Hamudar Asur, and the Mishnah doesn't say this, but it's obvious that, but obviously I can benefit from my own stuff, and it goes without saying. Hare at alai cherem, you will be for me cherem. So the Noder is Asur, but obviously the other guy is Mutar, right? If I say you will be cherem to me, it means I won't get any benefit from your stuff, but you can obviously benefit from your own stuff or my stuff. But if you say Hareini alecha va'at alai, okay, I say that you are cherem to me, and I am cherem to you, then shnehem asurim. Okay? You're going to be forbidden to my stuff, I'm going to be forbidden to your stuff. Ushnehem mutarim b'davar shel olei bavel, v'asurim b'davar shel otah ha'ir. Now, this goes back to something we learned earlier. Remember about the Beit HaKnesset that we talked about? That it's public property. Okay, so now, what's the situation here? If there's things that are of Olei Bavel, which we're going to see in a minute what this is, which is public property, but defined as public property of Olei Bavel, we'll see in a minute, then they can each benefit from it, even though, in other words, what we're basically going to say is, in the case of Olei Bavel, nobody really has ownership over the dvarim that are Olei Bavel, okay? But Asurim B'davar Shel Otah Ha'ir, but things that belong to the city, we pay city taxes, the city taxes go to build all those things. We have part ownership in everything that belongs to the city, all the public property. So therefore, if I'm forbidden to you and you're forbidden to me, then neither of us can get any benefit from any of the public property. So now we're going to distinguish again between which public property yes, which public property no. Ezehu davar shel olei bavel, kegon har habayit, v'ha'azarot, okay, of the Beit HaMikdash, v'habor sheb'emtza haderech, who remembers that? Mm-hmm. Remember, they dug all those wells for the olei bavel to get to Yerushalayim. That's why they're called olei bavel, because they need to, right, so they could drink on their way. And then, right, and then they did these pasei bira'ot on the side so that you could have like an eruv and you'd be able to pick up the water and lift it up when if it was Shabbat, you wouldn't have a problem. So those things are considered public property that nobody has any ownership over. V'ezehu davar shel otah ha'ir, kegon ha'rechava v'ha'merchatz u'beit ha'kneset v'ha'teva v'ha'sfarim. Okay, so the rechava of the city, we talked about that in Ta'anit, they would go to the rechava shel ir to daven on one of the fast, right, when we would get to a certain stage of fast, they would go to the rechava shel ir. It means like the city center, the city square, okay, the kikar. The merchatz, okay, which is interesting. We saw the other day about a privately owned merchatz. Here it seems that some of them were publicly owned. The Beit HaKnesset, okay. Now there we saw that, right? What there's a problem here because the Beit HaKnesset there, it seemed to indicate, right, that it was
owned by the people. There was the members of the congregation owned it.
Right, and you couldn't.
And therefore, you couldn't forbid other people.
But it was davar she'en bo chalukan. Because it was davar she'en bo chalukan.
Right, you couldn't forbid other people.
To share it. And here they dafka say yes. There's a question asked about it. Anyway, it's a bit of a question. This seems to contradict because that right. I know why. In the Beit HaKnesset case, there, what did we say? In the end, it's a machloket, right? Because it's a place she'en bo chalukan. That was the case the Mishnah was cholek about. But Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, each one goes and says, I'm using my portion when I go in. I'm using my share. So, and we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And this Mishnah seems to paskin like Chachamim. So how could it be that our Mishnah paskins like Chachamim and that Mishnah paskins like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? So some answers are given, but it's a, and the Rambam, I think, right, what the Rambam says, paskins like this. There's some, right, it's a big question. There's an answer in the Tosfos Yom Tov. I tried to finish reading it before I got here, but I ran out of time. So he, Dafka brings some answer, but I didn't catch the whole answer. Okay. V'hateva, okay, the teva, I assume it's the teva that they daven on. Hasfarim, okay, so it's unclear, do we mean Sifrei Torah? Do we mean Sfarim that people learn with? What kind of Sfarim are we talking about? Okay, so those are all things that are considered owned by everybody, and because of that, each one can't benefit, which obviously is going to create a big problem, right? If you can't go into the Beit Knesset, it's a problem. Vakotev chelko lenasi. Okay, so now, in order to solve this problem, it's actually the nusach here is a little strange. It should be yichtov chelko lenasi. In other words, what should he do to resolve this problem? He can sell his share to the nasi and tell the nasi that you're responsible, right? I'm giving you my share. And if I give you my share, then I no longer am an owner in it. Okay? The nasi kind of sounds like the Rosh Ha'ir almost, right? If you take...
Then, so then he would be allowed to come into the bakery.
Exactly. This is how you resolve it. Each of the people you would have in this case, right, where both are forbidden to each one is forbidden to the other, you'd have to have everybody basically say, we're going to give our portion to the nasi, we're going to give our rights of it. We're giving up our rights, basically, and we're giving it to the nasi. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, echad kotev lanasi ve'echad kotev lahedyot. You don't have to necessarily write it to the nasi. You can also write it to anybody. I can say, I'm going to sell to some, obviously not to the other guy, because if I sell to the other guy, I'll be forbidden. But also, he can't sell to the other guy because he can't get benefit. Anyway, he sells it to some random person. He says, I'll sell you my share of the shul, and now I can go into the shul. Okay, so now they're going to say, ma ben kotev lanasi, lekotev lahedyot. What's the difference? So now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you can, this is according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can write it to the nasi, you can write it to the hedyot. So the Mishnah wants to know, what's the difference? Is there a difference? Obviously, there is a difference. That's why they're asking this. What's the difference whether you write it to a hedyot, a regular person, or you write it to the nasi? Shakotev lanasi, ein sarich lezakot. Lehedyot sarich lezakot. If I sell something to some third party who's not there at the time, I can't just sell it to him without, right? You can. We have this concept, zochin la'adam shelo b'fanav. You can give someone a zchut even if they're not there. But how do you do it? You can't just do it and say, I'm going to do it. You have to give it to some middleman who acquires it for you. He does a kinyan for you. So if I do that and I give someone something and he does a kinyan for someone else, I can be zochahim. So now what do we say? In this situation, if I want to sell my part of the public property to some random person, I have to do it through someone else and have them do a kinyan on it to make it a legitimate sale. But if I do it to the nasi, I don't need that because it's sort of like an obvious route, you know, where you can, it almost somewhat belongs to the nasi anyway, right? Like who owns public property here? The Yiriyah owns it, right? So the Yiriyah and the Rosh Ha'ir is their nitzid. So if I just say I'm giving it up to the nasi, I can do that without having to do any formal transaction. So Rabbi Yehuda says you could do either one, but if you do it to the Nasi, you don't need a formal transaction. If you do it to Hedyot, you need a formal transaction. Chachamim omrim, echad zeh v'echad zeh tzrichim lezakot. You have to do a kinyan for each one, even the Nasi. V'lo dibru b'nasi ela behoveh. Why did the Mishnah say, yichtov chalko lanasi? Okay? In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it said yichtov chalko lanasi because that's an easier way to do it. You don't even need a kinyan. According to Chachamim, it said yichtov chalko lanasi. Why? Shelo dibru b'nasi ela behoveh. They brought the standard case. The standard case is that if a person's going to write away his nechassim to someone, he's going to do it to the nasi. Okay? No matter what, he has to do a kinyan, according to Chachamim. But the obvious case would he'd be to write to the nasi. Why is that? Very obvious. In this context, if I write my portion to one of you, let's say you get angry at me one day, you could forbid me to all the stuff, and then I'm stuck. Then I have no way to get out of it because I have no ownership anymore to sell to anyone. The assumption is the Nasi is not going to do that kind of a thing. The Nasi is not going to penalize some random person and say, you know, oh, you sold me your portion, oh, you're no, you know, now I'm going to forbid you to it, and you're stuck. So that's why generally it would be a smarter way, and that's why that's what most people do, is they go to the Nasi and they don't go to a random person and risk who knows what's going to be in the future. Which also goes according to what we've been talking about, how much Nedarim were such a prevalent part of their lives, and really people use them and abuse them, and maybe that's, and like Shari said yesterday, maybe that's why this Masechet is giving so many examples of Nedarim, just to kind of stress that you better be careful what you do, and maybe you should limit your use of them. Okay, last line, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein anshei Galil tzrichin lichtov, shekvar katvu avotehen al yedehen. Now, when it comes to public property, the Galil, I told you we get back to the Galil here, there's no reason, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to write away your nechassim. You don't have to do a shtar or a kinyan with someone for the, you know, to be mezakeh the nasi, because all of their parents already, you know, something happened in history, which was going to come up in the Gemara, that they all wrote their nechassim already to the nasi, and all public property is no longer owned by individuals, it's all owned by the nasi. Okay, you will see in the future.
They're already fighting so much. Something like that.
They were fighting, right. We'll see. Okay. I mean, you'll see, and I mean, I can jump ahead, but it says, Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, I'll just read ahead for a second. Anshe HaGalil, Kantirnin Hayu, Hayu Nodrim Hana'a Zemize. Okay, there you have it. They would be constantly, they were just people who were, right, Mekantirim, right? They would like banter all the time. So, Du Avotehem, but Katvu Chalkehem Lenasis. So they at least wouldn't have problems with public property. Okay, to resolve that issue of these people taking Nedarim all the time. Now again, this is just a good situation of where you have, we know this happened historically, we don't know when, and Rabbi Yehuda is obviously giving his take on what happened. It doesn't necessarily mean that that was the actual truth. Maybe he had a misorot about it, or maybe he just, you know, like everything, like with Kitniot, right? When Kitniot, when the first discussions of Kitniot come about, it's all people who already see it in existence and are trying to figure out where it came from. It's not the first person who did it. So often we have that in the sources where we have the fact on the ground, and then people try to figure out what's the logic behind that fact. And what. So he says that it must be, and it's actually pretty logical, that that's why they did it, because they realized that this was a good way to avoid, you know. Now, whether it was because they were bantering all the time and forbidding themselves, or maybe they just said, let's try to avoid if there were to be a situation. Let's just be smart about it, and Meirosh will decide that this is what we're going to do. Okay, Shabbat Shalom.